Thank you. This call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, operator. Just for the record, let me whiz down the names who are with us today. Besides Glenn and Maria from staff, we've got Dan Krim, myself, Philip Shepherd. We've got Palmer Hamilton, Pat Kane, Avery Doria, Milton Muller, Leo Longyear, Susan Finn, Valt Bernatris, Steve DelBianco, Chris Gibson, Doug Eisenberg, Steve Metalitz, Michael Warnicker, and Margie Millan. And some other people may join us later, and if they do, they'll be included in the outcome report from this call. So,
Yahovi Autum has also joined.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yeah. Been
good morning,
Hello.
Philip.
Hello, Yahovi. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
So the object of today is to start to go through the draft final report for this version 1.5 that was circulated a little over a week ago. There's been some very good commentary already on the list. All those comments will be picked up and put into what becomes version 1.6 following this call and the next week's discussion and the call following that week. So there'll be a new version of the report after the call next week. I think the discussion we've had over this so far has been a good mix. Both the people who are saying, no, I don't quite agree with that, please record my views, and those will certainly be done, and a whole range of useful clarifications in terms of accuracy of what they're saying in the report or things like that, which all have been captured. And just to make it something that we can structure in terms of the time in front of us, which is about an hour, I thought it'd be easier if we take the report in sections, and we try to capture comments on sections 1 to 4 today, and on the call next week we'll be doing the rest of the report from section 5 onwards, and sections 1 to 4 encompass our broad objective. Section 2 is about what the operational point of contact is, its relations to the registrant, etc. Section 3 was the description of the role and responsibilities of the OLPOC, and Section 4 were compliance and enforcement procedures as to when those roles and responsibilities of the OLPOC finish. So is everybody happy with that as a structure for today's call? Splendid. And if they are, we'll start. I think we'll just take it piece by piece. If we have long queues, what I'll try to do is give priority to people who haven't already commented on list. And if you have commented on list, there's no need to say everything you've said on list again. We will certainly capture what you've already said. If you've got some new things to say, of course, then by all means, we'd like to hear them. So if we can, kick off with section one of the report, and that's the one page which is just broadly describing objective. And that's attempting to sketch out the public interest objectives there, this balance between data privacy protection and the public interest in terms of the pursuit of criminality and other bad faith. And before I take comments, I'd just like to say I think one point I think might be made by Dan, which I think was quite right, was that we need to change the title or the subtitle there to capture the fact that data privacy is part of a public interest objective as well, and we will certainly do that in the next version of the report. But would anybody like to say anything about the current text of Section 1 objective?
So this is Steve DelBianco, just one question.
Okay, we've got Steve. Anybody else?
Philip, this is Palmer. I'd like to be in the queue.
So that was who again?
Palmer.
Palmer, yeah. Palmer, anybody else? Okay, then we'll stick with those two for the moment, Steve.
Just the third paragraph in the section one other objective, the proportionality of the cost of the change and the benefit. The question would be, we have an implementation item here that says that we're going to need cost estimates, both on an upfront cost as well as an ongoing cost in order to make that evaluation. Is that something that we need to begin gathering now, or do we put an implementation item that staff would have to work with registrars to assess costs and this cost on the accessors and reflectors as well as the registrars?
It's a good question, actually. Funny enough, by coincidence, was one that Maria and I discussed briefly yesterday, where we thought what might be useful would be to put an additional section to the report, which would be this group's recommendations of future work items for study or feasibility studies. And I think that we thought certainly there, you seem to be going in the same direction, that it might be useful to capture under that some factual information in terms of some of these costs, so we can get a better feel on exactly what they are, so that if there are implementations to do with cost recovery options, etc., it will give some degree of magnitude to that. So that certainly can be one idea captured. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And then Palmer, you're next.
Philip, just an editorial suggestion. The point Dan made, I wondered if balancing personal privacy with other public interests, and other public interests, obviously, speaking for banks, preventing phishing and other forms of fraud, that would be an additional public interest.
Yep, that sounds like a good way of capturing it to me, certainly.
Wendy Seltzer with a comment.
Okay, Wendy, I'm checking your list. Anybody else? No, Wendy, off we go.
I'm just wondering why we're including that rubric of public interest when many of the interests that have expressed are very specifically private interests. And if privacy is being contrasted with them, why are the requests for enforcement of private rights not listed out as private interests as well?
Okay, well, I think what we're trying to do is to rephrase that objective to make it clear that we're talking about a series of public interests, one of which being data privacy, the second of which being the war pursuit of criminality or consumer fraud, for which some of the private interests would be a route rather than objective. I think that's what we're trying to capture there. So I think certainly we've agreed that we need some rephrasing there, because the current implication of that balance doesn't quite capture the idea. It leapt too readily to the grammatical transposition of public and private, but it doesn't actually work in this context.
Right. I just would hesitate to try to capture all of the other interests even as public interests. I wouldn't say that we would all agree that the enforcement of particular private rights is always in the public interest. And so balancing personal privacy and other interests.
Okay.
Well, this is Dan. Let me, if I may, just briefly comment. The reason that I removed the words public interest from my suggestion was specifically because of the difficulty of defining what the various types of interests were. And if we simply delineated exactly what we're talking about, which is personal privacy interests versus the harmful use of domains, that would capture what we're talking about without having to worry about trying to categorize it.
Uh-huh. Hey, this is Suzanne. I wonder if I could chime in.
Suzanne, by all means.
If I could refer the group back to the GACUIS principles, that's where we did, in fact, try to provide an indicative list of public interest uses that we consider to be legitimate uses of WHOIS data. I'm not sure if that is still a reference point for this working group, but I thought I would just remind that we did try to provide such a list.
Okay, that sounds like a very good reference point for this particular part of the report, so thank you for reminding us of that.
Sure.
This is anybody else with comments on Section 1?
Yeah, this is Avery. Can I make one comment?
Yep.
It's a slightly different one here. It's something that shows up in this first paragraph, the bad faith by registrants, and it's something that I feel going throughout the document. Is when we're talking about bad faith, we're talking about very few registrants. And there's sort of an implication in bad faith by registrants that this is the overwhelming number of registrants that have bad faith or criminality. And so I'm wondering if we can modify that by bad faith by very few registrants. Because, and it's something that shows up in the first paragraph, but also seems to percolate through the document and the discussions we've had that, you know, in general, registrants have bad faith or criminal intentions, whereas that's a severe minority of registrants. So I'm wondering if we could just sort of indicate that.
Okay, I understand the point. I think our objective is to try to keep the language neutral.
The word certain registrants would be.
Yeah, I think certain would certainly maybe capture it for me. That avoids the difficult path of quantifying it.
What, this is Walt. Can I get in the queue?
Yes, Bob.
This is Milton, too. I'd like to get in.
Walt and Milton. Okay. Yeah. Anybody else while we're here? Okay, Walt, off you go.
Thank you. Well, what I think with the bad faith by registrants, what happens is that the real bad spammers usually register 1,000 or 10,000 domain names in one batch. So if a legally operating registrant only has one name, you got 10,000 on the other side. So that's why probably it might look like bad faith by registrants.
Okay, that's a good point. But we still capture that by saying certain registrants.
I think so.
Perfect. Very good. Milton.
Yeah, I'd just like to not get too bogged down in this point, so let me just say that I think that the Dan Krim's formulation is perfect, balancing personal privacy against harmful use of domains. It doesn't say whether the harm is public or private, avoids that whole issue, and I think it's an unobjectionable formulation, and we should accept it and move on.
Okay, thank you for that. I should take all those into comments and see if I can come up with some new brilliant text for version 1.6, but I think we probably can, because I think everybody's objective is clear there. So section 2, maybe a more meatier section. So it's all about what is the operation point of contact. Any questions on 2.1?
This is Valk.
Valk, yeah.
Do I understand this correctly, the registrant could be his own OPOC? Because if I was a spammer, I'd know what I would do, and I'd never give the information.
The registrant is under the basic proposal, is able to choose who the OPOC is. And I think there's been no discussion to say that choice should not be themselves.
Okay, because that's the way I read it here, it might implicate that you can be your own OPOC as a registrant.
But if you are your own OPOC, then you have to provide your contact information.
Okay, but what if I don't? What happens then? I'm looking at
then you don't even get a registration.
Oh. Okay. Or it would be revoked.
This is Steve. Could I get?
It would. I guess it would never happen because. The registrar would then not receive enough information to make a registration.
Okay, I'm just trying to look at this from an enforcement point of view, so thanks.
Sure. Okay, look.
I just want to get in the queue on that point. I mean, I think it's probably more accurate to say it would just be the status quo. They would submit, let's say, false information or incomplete information, and the status quo, that would be accepted by most registrars, and there would be this remedy through the WHOIS data problem reporting system that would, in a third of the cases, solve the problem within a couple of months. So, I mean, it's just kind of the status quo. But I think we do need to preserve the ability of a legitimate registrant to designate him or herself as an OPOC, and then, you know, kind of the issue goes away.
Uh-huh. Okay, look. Anything else on 2.1? Then 2.2, how does the OPOC relate to the registrant? There's been discussion here about trying to improve the language so that we are not implying that our description of broad terms relationship to the registrant as an agent implies the legal designation of an agent under certain national rules, and that qualification will certainly be picked up in the next version. Is there any other comment that anybody wants to make on 2.2 besides that one?
This is Avery. Can I make one?
We've got Avery. Anybody else? Nope, off you go, Avery.
I think that there was a lot of, as I listened, a lot of disagreement with the notion of agency of any sort on the OPROC. So I think while there was perhaps some support for a notion of agency on the OPROC, I think it's by a long shot not something that was agreed upon.
What description would you give of somebody who is being appointed to do a job by the Greater Strand? What would be your preferred terminology?
Designee. I mean, they've been designated to fulfill certain tasks, but there's no notion of agency in it at all. And you know, without the various national definitions of agency, but agency almost always, even in the vernacular, has certain connotations. Whereas they've been designated just as the technical point of contact or the administrator was designated to a task, this is designated to a broader task. But I don't think there was agreement for much beyond that, though there certainly was support among some for more beyond that, but not agreement.
Okay, Doug. Other comments on that, changing this phraseology to designee, which may obviate the need for any further qualification?
Steve Metallic, just you, please.
Chris,
Wendy, Octopus.
Steve, Wendy, anyone else? All right, I'll give us a moment. Chris.
Well, another possible description is contractual service provider. There is some sort of arrangement between the registrant and the OPOC, and I tended to agree that calling that arrangement an agency is problematic because of the various laws that regulate agents in countries around the world, and some of them have all sorts of, if you go to South America and other places, you'll see that they're quite extensive. So a contractual service provider is something more than a designee, and I think designee is not sufficient to describe what would have to be the relationship between a registrant and an OPOC. I would prefer agent to designee, but...
Okay, does a contractual service provider imply a contract?
An agreement, which is a contract, if there's any agreement between them, or that's what I think you're talking about, a legal agreement.
Right. Do you envisage that being a written agreement or a verbal agreement, and does a verbal agreement have the same meaning across the globe?
I'm not aware of any statute of frauds type of requirement for this type of contract that would require it to be in writing across the globe. I would hope that it's somehow in writing or in some form that's recognized as writing, even if it's in electronic form.
Okay, so you're actually in favor of a written contract between the registrant and the OPOC for the millions of registrants.
Otherwise, I don't understand how the OPOC can require speaking on behalf of the registrant if there's not an agreement between them.
Okay. Steve.
Oh, yes, just two thoughts. First, I agree that agent is a word with a lot of baggage and may not be that helpful. But there was discussion earlier in this process. An example was given of time limits, that giving notice to the OPOC to the extent that we could apply this under different national laws, it should have the effect of giving notice to the registrant. That's a kind of an agency type relationship, but I mean it may be helpful just to give that example. The other suggestion I would have, and I think it kind of builds on what some of the other alternatives that have been proposed here, is maybe we should just say here that the relationship between the OPOC and the registrant should be a consensual relationship with defined responsibilities. What worries me about designee is that, I could designate Queen Elizabeth as my OPOC, but she doesn't even know that, and nor does she know what she's supposed to do. So I think it kind of carries forward into the next two points, but I think a consensual relationship with defined responsibilities, an agency relationship could be an example of that, but it doesn't get us into the box of exactly what an agent is and something that might mean different things in different countries.
Okay, and that suggests indeed there's a certain two-way relationship there. Fine. Is everybody happy with that change if we rephrase this to to bring in the phrasing consensual relationship with defined responsibilities?
That's an improvement over my my
interest.
Sounds good.
I still prefer designee, Wendy. I don't think that it's the business of this task force or of ICANN to be specifying the nature of the relationship.
Okay, and how do you square the concept that we're saying that the OPOC has to have a certain role on behalf of the registrant and the fact that they could have absolutely no connection with the registrant, the point that Steve made?
I think then that's grounds for bringing a lawsuit against the registrant if the registrant has failed to designate someone who can properly perform responsibilities. But
you don't see it as an easier option of describing a consensual relationship in the first place rather than avoiding lawsuits? It's a rhetorical question. Wendy, you were in the list anyway. Was that the point you wanted to make, or had you something else to say?
Yes, I simply wanted to support the designation as designee rather than specifying in greater detail what the relationship would look like.
Okay.
This is Chris. I just wanted to refer back to the original charter, which did say to define the roles, responsibilities, and requirements of the OPOC. So I think we are within scope to speak about this issue.
I wasn't trying to say it was out of scope.
I was responding to Wendy.
Went further, or that there was agreement on anything stronger than designee at this point.
Yeah, and I was suggesting that it was out of scope for ICANN to be trying to define that relationship, even if it were within scope of what the task force had been told to ask to consider.
Which is a whole new set of escaping questions that we're not going to go into today. Yes, Adam. Yeah, go ahead.
Just one point with respect to the relationship of between, or whether this is a, you asked whether this should be a written contract or not. That to some degree relates to the next point, and perhaps I could envision a system where it might not be necessary to have a written contract between the registrant and the OPOC if you had the agreement to be an OPOC that is made to the registrar be in some sort of verifiable form, i.e. something that would be considered a writing even if it's electronic form or something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that reflects a discussion on the group where we were trying to avoid unnecessary binding contractual relationships being developed as a result of our work. But we would, our recommendations, if they went forward, would presumably cause a change in the registrar's accreditation agreements, and then would ripple through to the registrar terms and conditions, which any registrant would buy into if they're registering with them. And that would be the, I think what we're trying to capture here is something that can be appropriately factored into that document trail rather than us trying to do anything different. I think that seemed to be where the bulk of the group was more comfortable, but certainly.
Yeah, I'm just saying that you might be able to, that you might need a written agreement here if there weren't some sort of consent agreement that was brought in the sections afterwards. It's a little dependent.
Okay, understood. Thank you. So, let's move on to 2.3, bearing in mind that we are changing wording away from agent. Who would like to make a comment on 2.3? Okay, I have silence. Then let us move on to 2.4, sorry, somebody say something?
Yeah, I guess.
So who is that?
This is Avery.
Avery, hello.
So at line 98, there's...
Line 98. 98?
Right. You've got a whole agreed column of...
I think your numbering must be different to my numbering.
Oh, okay, sorry.
You're on 2.3, are you?
Right, and then, so you had the modality for verification.
Yeah.
And then you went into agreed.
That's 131, Aubrey.
Oh, okay, and mine it says 98, can I say?
Are you perhaps looking at version 1.4?
No, I'm looking at version 1.5.
Okay. Anyway, that's true. That's using different software that is doing offline numbering differently.
Yeah, I guess so. That's right. I don't use Office. I use OpenOffice, so that may be my discrepancy.
Okay.
I won't use line numbers anymore. So I guess the verification of active email addresses at the time of registration must be obtained. It would be up to each registrar to implement this in any way they choose. I did not have the impression from reading the list that that reached the level of agreed. So I'm actually surprised at the silence.
Okay, I mean, there was, as we've indicated, I think some registrars were concerned about the need for verification there. Although other registrars believe the implementation would be consistent with existing practice. That's what's currently picked up in the report. And let me just see if we had any new comments on
that the failure to obtain that verification.
Was 2.3, wasn't it? Yeah.
Wendy, I'll just jump in to say that silence is not implied as agreement with the agreed statement here.
I guess that this, maybe this is me jumping in and sort of saying, if people don't agree with the word agreed as we're walking through this, this seems a really good time for people to bring it up. And I'm bringing up the ones that I think I saw on the list, more so than necessarily whether I've agreed or not.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, you know.
If there had been one subsequently to, the posting on the list, of course, that has already changed the next report. We're only looking at picking up what
then can I recommend that as you go through it, if any of these agreed are no longer agreed in the current draft being, you know, worked on, that be noted otherwise so that we don't have to sort of, you know, if it's already been downgraded to support with alternate positions, then that's fine. But looking at it at the moment, it still says agreed. And I just want to make sure that coming out of this meeting,
okay,
what is labeled agreed is likely really agreed.
Uh-huh. And are you speaking on behalf of the registrars who oppose that need, or are you saying you call others?
I'm speaking in general of, you know, and asking people, basically. I look at the word agreed here, and just from what I've read from registrars and others, I'm not sure that agreed is the right term, and so I'm really asking for it to be confirmed.
Yeah, I mean, what I picked up there, I think, is I've got three registrars. I'm just looking at my draft for the next version. Three registrar views and an alternative view about not even enabling registration until verification was complete. That's what's come on the list since the release of 1.5. Okay, and Wendy, you wanted to make a point where your view was that verification is not needed or nothing happens, or what was the change you want to see?
I would say verification is not necessary.
Okay, clear. Other comments on 2.3? Can we move on to 2.4?
I guess, Philip, this is Adam.
Uh-huh.
Just, I guess that it might be, if there's an alternate view in that just sort of asserts that verification is not necessary, it might be worthwhile to put I don't know what the proper phrasing would be, but others questioned how the responsibilities of the OPOC would be enforceable if the verification had not been obtained.
Okay, Dick. Right, it's clear. 2.4, consent to be an OPOC. Is it necessary for the OPOC to give consent? And again, here we are saying that it was agreed for consent to be done. We've had similar comments, I think, on the list to the previous point about verification, mostly from registrars, which will be listed under opposing views in the next report. One registrar opposed the need for consent, believing implementation to be overly burdensome. Another believed it would be consistent with existing practices. Another registrar commented, anyway, existing registrar process with certain registries can take weeks. And that's what has been, I think, on the list since 1.5 was done or previously. Any comments we want to make on 2.4?
Aubrey,
question. Aubrey, who else? Wendy?
Chris Gibson.
Chris, who else? Okay, Aubrey.
So does this mean that this one has now been downgraded to support? And then the other question is, it presuming or is including the act of agency, which we discussed earlier as being certainly not something that was agreed, that there is a relation of agency. So I'm wondering if this is now a support with alternate views, et cetera, listed.
Okay. One of the things that I'm currently doing in the report is trying to list broad areas of agreement and then listing views against that. I think one of the challenges of the group of 60 people who speak as individuals typically is attempting to make a determination when those views against would coalesce into the group being support. And I think that is actually one of the more taxing of objectives for this group, given its size, versus a task force or constituency-based group where those tests can be done with a simple round of votes. So the answer is, I am uncertain as to how to assess what is currently described as support.
Yeah, I would have understood that if you had no substantial opposition, you know, maybe just one voice, two voices, that you would be in the agreed. But if you've got, you know, opposition coming from various different quarters to something, then you're probably in the support category. But if we follow
yeah.
patterns that have been followed, for example, in the IDN group and others for how these terms were used.
Okay, I mean,
as you said, you know, that's why I'm asking a question, because as you said, the ultimate authority for making these decisions is yourself. I'm really just trying to understand the basis on which, and I thought I'd heard, you know, this as sort of, well, not quite at the threshold of agreement. You know, various things we've gone by. For example, the first one, that there would be an LPARC, you know, perhaps we're indeed at that strong level of agreement, but when there's been a lot of discussion, then I'm not sure that we're at that level, and so it's more questions.
Okay, thank you for the question, and something we'll try to factor into future versions. Wendy, you're next on the list.
Yes, I disagree with this step of confirmation again, because I don't think that there is justification for making registration with an OPOC more onerous than registration without an OPOC, and since there's currently no verification of actuality of existence of the registrant or technical or administrative contacts, I don't think that there should be a verification of actuality or of agreements with the OPOC.
Okay, well, this is consistent with your no need for verification and therefore no need for consent.
Thought this is Steve. Could I get in the queue?
Yeah, I had Chris first, I think, and I'll add you after that, after Steve.
Yeah, I think so. I would agree with this principle of consent, with the principle and with the idea that it should be obtained from the registrar. I did submit a comment on the list. In that, I suggest that there should be some flesh or detail given to what consent means. Right now, it reads consent to being an OPOC. And when you then turn, of course, to the next section, 3, there's some responsibilities, relay, reveal, and remedy. And I know we'll get to those. But even just focusing on relay, I think that perhaps in the implementation options box, you have to suggest that consent would refer to at least entail some of the responsibilities. Otherwise, I can't, again, see how you can require an OPOC to perform for even the relay function if they're not consenting to some sort of detailed set of responsibilities.
Yeah. Thank you. Steve, I'll take your next, and then perhaps we have a question back to those who are raising questions about this. So Steve, next.
Yeah, just two quick points. The first really is an editorial one that follows on what Chris said. Since we have, in terms of the parentheses in what I have is line 152, right after the 2.4 section begins, where it refers again to agent, we may want to change that to have the OPOC give consent to take on the responsibilities of the OPOC or something like that.
Uh-huh. Right. You've got the word agent in 156 as well.
Yeah. The other point I wanted to make, just in response to what Wendy said, in fact, the registrant under the status quo is not only saying that there is a tech and admin contact, the registrant is promising to the registrar that he or she has obtained the consent of the technical administrative contacts, if there are any natural persons named there, to have their information sent in and listed in the WHOIS. That's in the current registrar accreditation agreement. So some kind of consent requirement here, and it really would not be a big step beyond that. I think what it does bring in is the idea of having certain specified responsibilities, because right now nobody knows what the tech and admin contact is supposed to do. There's never been any standard on that.
Uh-huh. Correct. So, Wendy, having had those two comments in terms of some rationale for consent or verification, can you explain to the group what your view is of the point of an OPOC?
So is that a question for me?
Yes.
I think that it's an intermediary to whom the registrant can entrust the privacy of his or her personal information. And I think that it should be very simple to insert that step into the domain name registration. I'm very concerned about various verification and consent procedures to the extent that they would delay the registration of a domain name, make it more expensive for the registrant, make it more complex for the registrant simply to go and purchase the domain name. And so I think that in the ordinary functioning, the registrant would indeed get consent from an OPOC and discuss with the OPOC or see via a form agreement what the rights and responsibilities were in that relationship, but I think that any time we mandate that through an ICANN process, we're going to be making it more complex for a registrant to avail him or herself of those privacy options.
Okay, so in your view, the OPOC as a facilitator of privacy is the only objective, and you don't see a need for an OPOC's role to be in pursuit of criminality and bad faith. Would that be correct?
As I said on list and in earlier discussions, I think that legal due process is the most direct route for pursuit of criminality and bad faith.
Okay, so that's so all right, and your view is clear. Thank you.
Philip, this is Milton.
Uh-huh, Milton. We have an open list. Off you go.
Okay. I don't know. I agree that I thought we had agreed in Puerto Rico that consent of the OPOC had to be obtained. I guess what may be troublesome here is line 158, that the registrar must obtain that consent. That may be what both Wendy and the registrars are concerned about. So if, as Steve said, the current registrar accreditation contract requires consent of the admin and technical contact, could we model the OPOC on that and not have the registrar obtain the consent?
So if the registrar doesn't, then it would be the registrant who would.
Right. The registrar would basically have to swear that they had gotten the consent.
Right. And how does that help in the pursuit of any bad faith?
I guess if they listed an OPOC that didn't give their consent, you would have grounds for taking down the domain.
Philip Russ here, if I could
okay.
answer or clarify.
Russ, yeah. Thank you. Let me just check if there's anybody else who wants to talk on the list. So I've got Ross, anybody else?
Adam Scoville.
Adam, anyone else?
Chris,
anyone else? Okay, Ross, off you go.
Yeah, I didn't hear Steve's earlier comments, Milton, but there is no such consent required from the admin technical contact today, either by the registrant or the registrar, or the registry for that matter. That's simply a free-form field that the registrant fills in as they see fit, to the extent that they can claim authenticity, or not even authenticity, accuracy of the data that they're supplying.
Okay, so today it's entirely a trust-based service that can only be challenged if there is inaccuracy, and that challenge at the moment has to go to the registrar. Is that right?
I believe that's the process, yes.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. Adam.
Yeah, I just, in response to Milton's point about possibly having the registrant obtain that consent, I guess I just would be in opposition to that, just because I think that we won't then have any reasonable way of verifying that the consent has been obtained, or, you know, if you say we then determine that the consent had not been obtained, well, how do we obtain that? In Steve's example, do we go to Queen Elizabeth II and get an affidavit from her that says, no, I never consented to be the OPOC for this domain? I mean, that's just not workable. And so I think that the only reliable way to obtain and verify that the consent has been obtained is if it's done by the registrar, and I think that we've covered the various concerns about whether that could be done by an email response system or a web page click-through agreement or something like that. I think that the feasibility of that has been covered on list and on previous calls.
Yeah. Chris?
Just following on that comment, and I saw something on the list this morning, for example, suggesting it should be the responsibility of the registrant to either get acknowledgement or consent. If the registrant's an individual or a company, I just don't see necessarily how they know, if it's coming from their direction, what they're supposed to do in relation to this whole system, where they'll know what they're supposed to be asking for. And so I do think it following on the comment just made, that it should be that the registrars are obtaining the consent.
Well, this is Dan. Can I get in the queue?
You can do, yeah. I'm hoping to move on shortly, but I think most points are probably late, but then off you go.
I would say that if we are relying on the registrant to get consent, the whole point here is that all the liability is on the registrant. So if there's some action of the OPOC that is not taken by the OPOC in some certain circumstance, that the registrant bears the responsibility and the liability for that. And, it would be handled at the enforcement level rather than at the verification level.
Right. Okay. So if we may, then let's move on to 2.5, is a section that describes proxy services, which has now been reduced to a description of proxy services, but a recommendation that in order to avoid a third layer between the underlying registrant and the OPOC, when a proxy service exists, the proxy and the first designated OPOC should be one and the same. Is everyone happy with that, or are the comments on 2.5?
So that's no longer marked as agreed?
It's currently marked as agreed.
It is. Okay. Thank you. Wendy, with a unsurprising disagreement.
Andy, well, it's a separate issue, actually. Wendy, what's the nature of your disagreement here?
Given the unreliability of various privacy protective services in the past, I think it should be open to the registrant to put layers in between if that's how the registrant
works. Okay, so layers are a good thing. All right, that's clear. Anyone else on this?
Philip, just a point of process question.
Yeah.
Or not a point of process, a process question. To what extent, again, I missed the beginning of it all, to what extent have you incorporated comments to the list on this? In other words, do I need to go over my notes again, or?
No, you don't. No, I said that in opening, that the next version of the report once you've gone through the whole thing in these two chunks today and next week. We'll attempt to capture all the comments that have been made on list. I thank you indeed for your ones in particular, the ones that were clarifications rather than opinion, was very helpful. And so if you've already said it on list, there's no need to repeat it on this call because they will be captured in the same way.
That's great. Thanks.
Okay, Doug, if we can move on to 2.6 then. This is OPOC and the tech admin contacts. And we're currently saying that we think tech contacts are a great thing and should continue, but that there seems to be no overriding reason for the future collection display of both admin and OPOC. And as an implementation option, consideration could be given to merging admin and OPOC. That's currently down as an agreed. Does anyone have comments on 2.6? Marvelous. Then let's move on to section 3, which is much more meaty. The role and responsibilities of the OPOC. Three different roles, relay, reveal, remedy. And relay being the basic role where we list those as agreed. There are discussions in terms of circumstances, and at the moment there are no alternate views. Let me see if any were picked up on list yet. No, not on relay. I think they came on reveal and remedy mostly. So anyone have comments on 3.1 relay? Good, okay, so we all agree there should be a relay function. And we move on to 3.2. This is the reveal function of the OPOC. The report is currently listing an agreed and alternative view and some implementation options under reveal. There has been debate on list, and I've recorded 1, 2, 3, 4 alternative views. On the agreed statement there, the alternative views so far reading was a view revealed is duplication of the access function. There's a view that reveal might contravene a national law. There's a view in favor of authentication of the requester. There's a view in favor of due legal process before reveal would happen. So besides those points, does anyone else want to make alternative comments to what we have on 3.2 reveal?
This is Avi with a question.
Uh-huh.
And when
with
the substance of the comments, and there do seem to be several substantive, could you explain why this still has the status of agreed?
Because I was explaining to you the status of report 1.5 and what I just read out was what's happened since 1.5 has been issued.
So in other words, this has been downgraded to support?
This may change depending on how we
right, but at the moment,
categorize.
You still see it as agreed.
But yes, there is, exactly, it's recording a set of alternative views, not all of which are in harmony, it has to be said, though.
Well, okay, that is a question. Do all the opposing views or all the alternative views have to be in harmony?
Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
I couldn't hear that. Can you repeat what you said very briefly?
My question was, do all the alternative views have to be in harmony for something to drop from agreed to support?
I see.
And I was thanked for the question.
Okay.
So, comments to the substance of 3.2.
But Philip, there's no answer to that question. It means it's a simple question.
It's an extremely difficult question, actually, Milton, in my view. my intent is we have a report up there with a number of assertions in terms of what's agreed. We're currently going through a process now to knock down whether or not that has sufficient agreement and whether there's a harmony of voices in one way or the other. That we can therefore characterize where there's been a change in what's there. And that is the objective.
I think this is an interesting process that's revealed some of the challenges of our three category process with a group of this size, disparity, and heterogeneity. So other points on the substance of 3.2?
This is Dan.
Dan, who else?
Wendy was in there.
I was in there too.
And Dan, Milton, Wendy, anyone else? Okay, if we get Dan.
Just a quick comment that if anyone here has other alternate views or supports alternate views, this would be the time to speak up.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dan. Milton.
Yeah, it's not a very controversial point, I hope, but this business about duplication of the access function,
uh-huh.
I don't quite understand what you're getting at with that. Is that, I mean, yes, in my understanding of access and reveal, there are two different channels for basically the same purpose, giving people the option to use whichever is more efficient and appropriate. So that there's nothing particularly wrong about the fact that they might be duplicating. In other words, reveal through an OPOC is precisely the same thing as what we meant by type 1 access in the subgroup B. So if that can be delivered most efficiently via the OPOC, then that's fine. If the OPOC doesn't work, then you need to use the registrar, then that's another option, but there's nothing wrong per se with both of those channels being possible.
No, and I think that's where the current recommendation is coming out. The alternative view that's recorded in 1.5 was that I think that because there's duplication of the access function, then there was no need for reveal. Perhaps I should make that explicit.
There's no need for reveal.
Yes. In other words, it should all be done via the access function.
All through the registrars.
Yeah, that was the point.
But the registrars don't like that, right?
Absolutely right.
Okay.
Right, who else is on my list? Wendy.
So I would object to any required reveal function. I don't have any objection to it being an option that you can request of the OPOC, and the OPOC can choose, can at the direction of the registrant reveal if that's the registrant's choice. As I've said elsewhere, I think required reveal should be only through due process of law.
Right, yes. I think required is probably more aspirational than implementable, because if your OPOC is appointed by the registrant and the registrant doesn't want anything revealed because they're acting in bad faith, I suspect you're not going to hear anything from the OPOC, but I understand the point you're making.
Well, so I don't think that it has to be that binary. I think there could well be registrants who wanted to protect their privacy and were willing to give out information on a one-by-one request basis that was more limited than display everything in the public who is. And so if they wanted their OPOC to pass that information along to somebody who was willing to give verification of their good faith in making the request, I don't see any reason to prohibit that kind of transaction, but I would very much oppose requiring the OPOC to have the information and to pass it on to anyone who asked.
Okay.
Right. Yep. I agree with that.
Steve,
and then Avery. Anyone else? No. Off you go, Steve.
Thank you, Philip. On last week's call, I made one other point in defense of both functions, both reveal and access, and it's not reflected in the notes, and that could just be because I was wrong. That's entirely possible, or maybe it was something that wasn't recorded. I suggested that there could be instances where the OPOC knows of the true identity of the registrant, but that the registrar would not have that data in their WHOIS record. I said, are there situations where only the OPOC can reveal the true identity, and the registrar cannot, through any access function, get to that person? And if that's the case, that would be justification for retaining a reveal function.
Okay, so maybe only the OPOC would know not full details of the registrant.
By virtue of how they would have set up their domain name records, and they put in the contact information, which none of them were the true registrant. They're either a combination of, as you say, the licensee, proxy, or OPOC, then only the OPOC is going to be able to get us the physical handle on who they are for purposes of doing an investigation or serving legal papers.
All right. So under the circumstances, there'd be no point in going to the registrar because all they would have is useless data.
You have it.
Yeah. Understood. Okay. Avery, next.
Hi. This time it's actually a substantive issue. On the reveal, on the one, for me it was my 16, but I know my lines are wrong. The reveal must take place when there is one of. I have two issues with that section. One of them is that it is an or as opposed to an and. I have problems with the notion that an allegation is a sufficient trigger, and problems with the notion that reasonable evidence equates to allegation. And then I have a problem with it as a, even if an allegation were sufficient, I believe that there has to at least been an and in terms of the relay having failed. So I definitely believe that it should be and relay had failed as opposed to or, whenever all you're dealing with is an allegation.
Okay, maybe bad phrasing. I think the last bit about relay failing is that we're saying that relay failing in its own right would be a requirement for reveal, because that was the first step.
And
what you're saying is that also that should be linked to the...
it should be an and not an or.
The evidence one, yes. The use of the word alleged, I think, was probably my phrasing rather than the group, because I presume that in all these cases it's an allegation. Would that not be right?
Well, I believe that the reasonable evidence of actionable harm is the phrasing that I can certainly agree with, but I can't personally agree with the notion that reasonable evidence and allegation are one and the same.
Philip, this is Adam. Can I perhaps offer a possible solution to what she's talking about?
Yes, solution is always welcome.
One option might be, I don't know if this would work, but maintain the second bullet point as an or, but say, or reasonable evidence that the who is data is inaccurate. So that you basically replace alleged with the same standard so that it mirrors the standard of harm.
Okay.
But, you know, you have to say, oh, I think that the who is data is inaccurate because, you know, I tried to send a letter to this address and it was returned as undeliverable, or the
right.
email bounced, or something like that.
Yeah, okay. And so on the same basis, perhaps we should rephrase first one to say reasonable evidence, actionable harm, and then such as that you've taken reasonable steps in terms of those other activities. So it's, you know, there was no intent to weaken reasonable evidence there. That was just bad phrasing. So
And I appreciate that. And the second one had to do with, I do think that these have to be the case and the relay has to have failed after a specified time. That,
so you're saying it's A or B plus C.
Yes. Right.
The
first one is an or and the last one is an and. And then you would have to change the one of, you know, you have to recast the whole thing, but yeah.
Yeah, that's all. Okay. We'd also need to add relay then as a separate point, wouldn't we?
This is Steve. Could I get in the queue?
Yes, indeed. Who else wants to be in this queue?
This is Wout.
Wout, who else?
Margie.
Margie, who else?
Chris,
who else?
Christina.
Ross with an administrative question, Philip.
Christina, Ross. Is there a question on timekeeping?
There's a question on timekeeping.
Because I'll answer that now. Shortly is the answer.
Great.
Steve, off you go.
Yeah, just to say that I don't agree that you should not get reveal unless relay has failed after a specified time period. That might be okay in some circumstances, but there's certainly some types of harm where you need an immediate reveal. I think that's the certainly the discussion within our subgroup. So I would oppose changing that last or to and. I would agree with some of the other changes. I think in terms of reasonable evidence of actionable harm, that's obviously an implementation question as to what you would have to put forward to meet that step.
Sure. Okay, so...
Philip, this is Dan. Can I get in the queue?
Agreed. Dan, I can add you to the queue. Vout was next.
Yes, thank you, Philip. What I would like to explain is what we do as spam enforcement agency is that we, when we get complaints from the public, from end users, that's the moment when we start investigating. So that's when there's a reasonable evidence of actionable harm for fraudulent or whatever sort of action against law. So we act on complaints and not on our own allegations or our own suppositions or whatever. So for me, this I think this standard as it is quite accurate. And in some cases, we definitely need to have a review straight away to make sure that a lot of people don't get harmed unnecessarily.
Okay. The next in the queue is Margie.
Yes, I just wanted to say I agree with Steve. I do have a problem with it being and the relay has failed because we, as a requester, won't know whether or not the relay actually forwarded a message, and there may not have been a response back. And to have those tied, you may not be able to identify who you have to take action against, and so I think it would be problematic to have those tied.
Okay. Thanks. Chris?
My point's covered by Steve and Margie.
Perfect. And somebody else whose name I can't understand from my own writing is next.
That might be me, Philip. It's Christina.
Christina,
and
it is. Thank you.
And I would just, I don't really have anything to add to Steve, Margie, and Chris.
Okay. All right. Then that train is clear. Did I miss anybody on that list?
This is Dan. Dan.
Dan, that's right. Dan. Off we go, Dan.
2 points. It seems to me that allegation can have various different levels, and the confusion that we originally had here is that reasonable evidence is one subset of possible allegations, and that whatever allegations there are should be constrained at least to the point of having evidence.
Yeah, no, I think we've all agreed that we're taking out alleged so as not to weaken the reasonable evidence test, which we'll introduce on the first two bullet points.
Right. The other point is that I don't really know how one would actually detect if a relay had failed, and because of the problems that others have expressed about that, I think maybe we should just remove that point. And it doesn't really matter why a registrant fails to act on some notification that might go through the OPOC. The point is that the registrant failed to act, and it doesn't really matter why that happened. So I would propose removing the point about relay entirely.
Okay. Thanks. So if we can we just try and finish perhaps off on 3.3, and then we'll probably have to call this call it a day for this call. 3.3 is all about remedy, in which we're saying actually not much remedy. We can change the word agent there based on our early discussion, and we're saying that typically because of the nature of the registrant's relationship, it will be inappropriate for the OPOC to be active any remedy. What we have included, though, is this cutout whereby the OPOC might be an appropriate actor when the website is a large host site, and therefore the OPOC is acting in the interest of the registrant. There was comments on list, which will be captured, about the fact that this sounds to be suspiciously out of scope for our working group, so we'll need also to flag that. But it's probably worth recording as it's part of the roles of the OPOC. Are there comments on 3.3?
Pat?
Anybody else?
Chris,
anyone else? Pat, off you go.
I'm actually concerned about the implementation options blob there. 24 hours seems significantly long to actually wait for a remedy to see them because of something bad happening.
Okay. Does anybody else have views on I can't remember now where 24 hours came from. Probably the early draft. Does anybody have other views on problems in changing that? It's implementation options, so it's only a maybe, so order of magnitude.
This is Pat. I would make it more, as soon as possible or something kind of generic, because if we put a number there, that's what everybody's going to do.
Yeah, so if I have a general comment about the implementation options as a whole, but I think I'll send my comments on that to the list.
Okay, that would be welcome, given our time constraint on this call. I'm very happy to generalize that. In all cases, implementation options are supposed to be precisely what they are, options. And just try to separate out, basically for the council's and staff purposes, the difference between policy recommendations and the way they may be carried out. Chris, you're next.
Okay, just on the first bullet under agreed, with the removal of agency, the rationale for that that bullet sort of goes away. So I don't know if you'll remove it or try to reword it, but. Obviously, if there's some sort of consensual agreement, it wouldn't necessarily be inappropriate.
Right, I think you know what we're trying to capture now by our new phrasing. So yeah, indeed, it needs a change. Thank you for that. Anybody else on 3.3 before we conclude?
Yeah, this is Walt.
Walt, yes.
And Dan.
Thank you.
And anyone else? Okay, Walt, off you go.
Okay. I think the 24 hours should be supplemented, maybe investigated into what sort of problems should be remedied. So there are probably remedies necessary for things like domain chasing, which should be held within minutes instead of 24 hours, while other remedies might take a week and it wouldn't matter really. So maybe there should be something of an inventory on that.
Okay, so a timeline proportionate to harm, something like that.
Right.
Okay, thank you. Dan?
On the first bullet point under agreed, I think that there would certainly be some cases where the OPOC might actually take some action on behalf of the registrant. But again, that would be at the direction of the registrant, so it would not be something that's mandated by policy.
Right. Yeah, okay. Fair comment. I think that's implicit, but we can certainly make it explicit.
Let me just reinforce that, Philip. There are many instances I can think of when a registrant might want an OPOC to engage in what you're calling remedy here.
Yeah, yeah.
So please do make it explicit.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for that. Now we've got about 50 minutes over time. We haven't quite managed section 4, but I think perhaps we'll try and pick that up in our next call, along with the rest of the report, which may be possible. So thank you all for your comments. As I said, there won't be a new version of the report until we do go through the rest of it, and so we can capture that all in one hit. But please do continue to send comments on list, as they're very useful to maintain as well, and certainly if you have simple text clarifications as well, they are equally useful to receive. So thank you very much.
Philip, are we
how many more calls do we have?
We're only about 40 minutes into this call.
Hmm? We're an hour and a quarter, according
never
to my
mind.
You were having so much fun, I know, it just flies past. In terms of numbers of calls, certainly a call next week. Then there will be what will hopefully be a near final version of the report, which we'll need to circulate for a reasonable time to allow any final group comments. And I need to talk to staff as to their timing to top and tail the report to make it ICANN-esque. So that all of the things that we need to have in these reports are included. But if that's going to take any longer than than it should, then I'd rather get the report out to the list so that we can discuss that.
But Philip, we didn't get to the access part here, and as you know, I had some pretty serious problems with that.
No, indeed. But that will be the subject of next week's call for certain.
Okay.
That's part of the scheme. We'll do section four, which is only a few lines, and then we're straight into it, I think, aren't we?
Section six.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, thank you very much, everybody.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.